idea. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Blast off!
going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html where you have access to not one but three separate chat rooms. Woohoo! All right. They say that for the beginning of most every show, I think. Anyway, if Pete and Repeat was on a boat and Pete fell out, who'd be left? Okay. So I posted some definitions in the chat room over there and give you a little bit of understanding of what it is I'm trying to say. I'll just go ahead and just read out these definitions. The first one that I posted in there is frequency definition. In physics, the number of crest of waves that move past a given point in a given unit of time The most common unit of frequency is the hertz, HZ for short, in case you're looking at a schematic. Corresponding to one crest per second, the frequency of a wave can be calculated by dividing the speed of the wave by the wavelength. So how long the wave is, and basically how fast. So in short, frequency is how fast you do something in a given time. Alright, pressure definition. The force exerted on a given area. See atmospheric pressure. Note the most familiar measure of pressure is PSI, pounds per square inch, used to rate pressure in automobile and bicycle tires. Yeehaw! Alright, and then the next one down in line is volume definition. In mathematics, the amount of space occupied by an object measured in three dimensions expressed in cubic units. In physics, the loudness of sound, density, molar volume, volume unit, and volume velocity. There's some speed going on there too. How fast something's happening. Alright, and last but not least, resistance definition. In electricity, a measure of the difficulty encountered by a power source in forcing electrical current through an electrical circuit, and hence the amount of power dissipated in the circuit. Resistance is measured in ohms. So, of all those definitions, all of them are something to contemplate when looking into what people are calling free energy, free electricity. All these different alternative energy sources out there, these are some of the things that they should be looking into, because they're very important. Anyway, so let's start off with... let's go all the way down to the bottom. Let's start off with resistance. See, one of the things that got me in trouble quite some time back was that I told people that I didn't care about current watts and amps. I said, I don't need current watts and amps to do what it is that I'm doing. And of course, you know, somebody who was supposedly educated got all infuriated by that comment, because I said I didn't need current watts and amps to produce energy that I was producing. And boy, I tell you what, the fight started. Basically, created a massive ruckus and sent a wave through the whole dream team, so to speak. All the brilliant minds that I'd pulled together at that particular point in time, and basically just started a fight and broke it all up, man. A lot of brilliant individuals went by the wayside because of that, which was a shame, because all these individuals that I'd found, I seeked them out on YouTube because of their work and their research, and I wanted to get us all together and, you know, solve this so-called free energy or energy crisis equation, you know, early on. Because I knew, you know, just like I know now, that, you know, I got certain skill sets. I got certain talents that I can do, you know. I'm pretty good. I see things mechanically, and I try to explain them in that kind of sense, which doesn't always match up with the terminology that the school book would say. But nonetheless, it's the same, you know, especially like whenever I try to make it simple for the average Joe to understand what it is that I'm talking about. Such as, if you understand plumbing, and you understand that in plumbing you have valves, and you have check valves, and you have different pressures and volumes and such, that if you understand how plumbing works, then you understand how electricity works, and you understand how electronics work. Because in every single deal, they are using volume, they're using pressure, they're using current flow, just the whole thing, resistance. Every single one of the definitions that I explained just a minute or so ago, So we talked about frequency, how fast something happens. We talked about pressure. We talked about volume. We talked about, what was the last one? Resistance. And so if you got a lot of current flow and you only got a small pipe to cram the water through, then that water pressure will back up behind that pipe and it will have to force its way through because it's trying to get out. All right, and so when you take over from a large pipe to a smaller pipe, you ramp the pressure up. You reduce the current flow because now you don't have the amount of volume that you had before. However, you ramp the pressure up. That's a key point to remember in there. And with with a lot of pressure, you can send an energy source faster with more frequency than you could at a large volume. I mean, obviously, if you have a large pipe and you're just dumping it all out on the ground, don't take long to move that energy from one point to the next. But if you're wanting to pressurize something, then you once again have to go back to using that volume to produce the pressure and know how to reduce that volume to pressure. Same thing with electronics, you know. And as far as the frequency range of it, we have different things in electronics that we call transistors, which are essentially like valves, you know. They open and close. A transistor would be almost the equivalent of a relief valve inside a you know, like a boiler, or you know, even in a water deal, so that when the pressure got up to a certain height, it would basically allow the current to flow. It'd allow the the pressure to flow through the other side, releasing the pressure. Well, that's what a transistor and a MOSFET does. Those are a couple components that are basically really fast acting switches that when it gets enough current to basically heat up or make the material inside the transistor or MOSFET more conductive, then it will allow the electricity to flow through to the next portion of the circuit. So it's basically a pressure valve is what a transistor excuse me, hate it when that happens. Basically a pressure valve what a transistor or a MOSFET is. And there's other mechanical ways to do the same thing as well, but for this show, this is what we're talking about. Anyway, so it's not just a pressure valve, it's also a switch, because even a pressure valve can be used as a switch to basically turn something on, turn something off. If the pressure drops down, it'll shut the water valve off, or if the pressure builds up, it'll open up the gate and allow it to flow through on the other side. Same thing with a transistor or MOSFET. And so, if you're in the chat room, you can click on, there's a picture that I posted in there that I took a screenshot of Ludic Science, which is one of the guys I subscribe to, and I love the way that he takes and makes something so simple for the average Joe to understand. There's a picture of a flyback driver circuit that he's put together, and in this you'll see that it has a power source, which is just a battery, and it has a resistor, and it has a MOSFET, power MOSFET, and it has a coil with a center tap. Now, when I say a center tap, if you take any coil and you basically get right dead center of it and put another wire in there, now you have a center tap coil. And on this particular design, to make a flyback driver, he used a ferrite core that was actually on a regular flyback transformer out of a TV set or an old CRT monitor, or there's a couple different places actually you can get some of these. But anyway, instead of using the natural primary coil that was on there, he wound his own, and he says in the video where you could either wind this as six turns of wire, on the ferrite core, or you can go 12 turns with a center tap for this particular circuit to pulse that flyback deal. I also pasted in the same photo. He gave the numbers of the actual MOSFETs that he used. I ordered 10 of these on eBay, so hopefully within a month or two I'll get them from China. It says use any power MOSFET, IRF-Z44 and or IRF-3205 work well. The resistor is a 180 to 220 ohm half a watt resistor. And basically, resistors are used in circuits to keep from burning something up so you don't get too much current flow through a particular part in there. So if you don't want a lot of current going to this MOSFET, then you put a resistor in there so that it doesn't get hot and burn it up from too much current trying to be crammed through that particular circuit. So that's what the resistor's for in this particular circuit. And the same concept applies whenever you want to try to run an LED. Yeah, LEDs are really sensitive to a lot of current, and so you put a resistor between that and your power source and your LED won't burn up. You can run a little LED off of a 9-volt battery as long as you have a resistor in there, and the resistor will protect that LED from getting too hot and burning up. Hold on, I'm being called here. Hello, Justin, we're live on air.
How's it going?
Pretty good. So anyway, folks, the picture that I posted in there, what you're looking at is essentially, I'll post this in the chat here for you, Justin, so you'll know what I'm talking about. Where's it at? Okay, there it is. It's terrible for live radio. Select all, edit, copy. All right. Don't you hate it when people talk while they do the things like that? Alright, so I'm going to post this in the Skype chat so Justin can see the picture and he can understand what it is I'm talking about, so we're not lost here. Alright, folks, back to the diagram. What you're looking at right there in that diagram from the schematic that Ludic Science put together is a flyback driver circuit with only two components. Essentially, it is a fast-acting switch. That's all it does. It takes the power source, which is the battery, and when the current flows through the MOSFET, it will cause the one side of the circuit to get warm enough or to have enough. It'll change the conductivity of the opposite side and allow current to flow through that circuit, and then it will pulse the coils on the opposite side. So basically, it's like going to your light switch and turning it on and off really fast. That magnetic pulse that's produced through the ferrite core then in turn energizes the secondary, which in a flyback transformer are thousands of turns of really fine wire. And so essentially what you just did was you took a big pipe and you went down to a smaller pipe in order to raise the pressure, which in turn in electricity raises the voltage and drops down the current. So this is a really simple circuit in order to make a high voltage power supply. Now I'm going to be putting out a design, and I will post a picture of said design whenever I get an opportunity to do so. I will post it to the Mad Science chat room, where I'm going to put together a rotary switch. And when I say a rotary switch, I'm not talking like a rotary spark gap for pulsing Tesla coils. I'm talking about a switch that basically uses an electric motor to spin a lobe that turns the switch on and off rapidly so that I can have more control over it and have a switch that won't burn up as fast. One of the problems with using transistors or MOSFET is if they get too hot, then they will burn up. And one of the problems with using a really fine wire on your secondary is that that really fine wire is not capable of carrying heavy currents. So if on the output side, if you're not using the output side properly and too much current can flow back into the output side, then basically that fine wire acts like a fuse in your car and will burn in half, and then your power supply is shot. So you're either going, heat's going to either destroy the windings on one side, or it is going to destroy the transistor or the MOSFET. Now, in electronics, there are things that they call heat sinks that you can attach to the back of these transistors or MOSFETs that will dissipate that heat and keep the MOSFET cooler than than it normally would be. And as long as you can keep it from reaching its thermal breakdown, the part will last a long period of time. Now, there are also water-cooled MOSFETs and heat sinks out, or heat sinks for MOSFETs and other parts like that. There are water-cooled systems which help to take yet even more heat away from. So the key in all of this is heat. Anything out there that reaches its thermal breakdown will basically destroy itself. So this particular design right here is a solid-state version of a fast-acting switch for pulsing coils. That's the simple of the whole deal. The higher frequency that you pulse these coils at, the higher frequency on the opposite side, the higher the voltage will rise on the other side. And the key to doing what it is that I'm talking about is the higher you can get the voltage, the better. The higher you can get the frequency, the better. And there is somewhere along that line there is a sweet spot to where you won't even get your parts hot. Your transistors won't get hot. Your motors, generators, whatever, they won't get hot because it doesn't meet the resistance of a large volume that you're trying to shove through a transistor. This higher voltage at the proper frequency will literally pass through a circuit without producing any resistance or friction that's going to in turn cause it to heat up and destroy itself. That's one of the things that I showed in that last video that I posted up there. Anyway, so now that you got all this high voltage, now you got to figure out a way to use it. So basically, that's where the definition of pressure comes into play. See, if you take a balloon and you hang it up above the ground and you got it some distance from the ground, and you just add a drop of water into it each time, then you can literally use the forces of gravity to, the more weight gets inside that balloon, the more that balloon will sag down and stretch out, and you can fill that with a small trickle of water. You can actually fill that balloon with water up and cause it to expand. However, if you take the same said balloon and you use the forces of pressure and you put a lot of pressure into this balloon, it will expand rapidly and eventually kerplat. It'll explode in your face. So we got to figure out how to take a high frequency, high voltage power source and bring that energy back around to something that would actually be usable again. So before I get through boring everybody to tears here, Justin, you got any thoughts on that circuit diagram I just posted in there? Justin, he disappeared on me.
I'm here. I was walking up the stairs and stuff, but I had my mic muted.
All right.
I don't know.
It's a fast acting switch. That's the simple of it. And when we talk about, you know, one of the problems that I have whenever I'm trying to explain to people a different type of energy out there is that they're like, well, you know, like this one particular individual that I he commented on my video about. I'm just going to have to look over there and get to that video and actually read the comment, just what he said and what I said in return. But nonetheless, basically he said that, you know, if he had a 9-volt taser and it'd ramp it up to 1,000 volts, but he hadn't produced any pressure. I'm just going to have to go get that video. Doggone it. Hate when that happens. Let me, I know I posted it in the chat. I'll just jump over there real quick. This one here ain't one to cooperate very well. So I'll try the other one. Oh, be patient, folks. I'm trying to click over to my own video and then be able to stop the volume before it makes a lot of racket on the deal there. Okay, I'm there. See, it did it anyway. I was afraid that was going to happen. These controls these days are getting really slow for some reason. Anyway, I'm trying to find this one particular... Doggone it. Push stop and it keeps going. Alright, I got to get down to this guy's comment because this is what I'm up against. Come on. So how's life treating you, Justin? Sitting here trying to wait for everything to load on here. I guess I got too many things going on. Okay, here we go. You reply. Alright. So basically this individual commented to me on my video and he said, a handheld taser converts 9 volts to thousands of volts, but no energy is produced. I don't think you created any energy. You just moved it from one battery to another. You could have just connected two batteries together and accomplished the same thing, which basically doesn't understand how energy travels. You know, it's like water finding its own level. Those two batteries... if one voltage is higher than the other, will equal each other out and basically become level. So I had to go out and give him a few definitions of things. I said voltage, electrical potential difference, electrical pressure or electrical tension, formerly denoted AV or AU, but more often simply as V or U. For instance, in the context of ohms or Kirchhoff's circuits law, is the difference in electrical potential energy between two points per unit electrical charge. So to say that connecting two batteries together would do the same thing, two batteries connected together would equal out the same charge as far as creating energy, the correct word you are looking for is changing the energy. The first law of thermodynamics, also known as the law of conservation of energy, states that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. Energy can only be transferred or changed from one form to another. For example, turning on a light would seem to produce energy. However, it is electrical energy that is converted. Last but not least, you said a handheld taser converts 9 volts to thousands of volts, but no energy is produced. In your example, you massively ramp up the from 9 volts to thousands of volts and then say, but no energy is produced. Pressure is what gets work done, such as when you get hit with that taser and all that force drops you in your tracks. Question for you, changing frequency from 50 to 60 hertz, what did you just do? And with your example, 9 volts to 1,000 volts, what happened there and why, and at what frequency is the output? To make it simple for you, a taser will not run your toaster because it is not designed to operate at that frequency. However, it could be modern toasters need a resistance to heat Nichrome wire 8020 is an ideal material because it has relatively high resistance and forms an adherent layer of chromium oxide when it is heated for the first time. Tungsten, also known as wolfram, is a chemical element which with the symbol W with an atomic number of 74. The free element is remarkable for its robustness, especially the fact that it has the highest melting point of all elements discovered, melting at 3,422 Celsius or 6,192 degrees Fahrenheit or 3,695 Kelvin. Yet at high voltage and high frequencies, you can vibrate it so rapidly that it produces heat and visible light. It is not that your taser hasn't produced energy, it is that you only know one use for the energy, and that is to drop a bad guy in their tracks. Nonetheless, you've got actual work done. Next time, just touch the bad guy with the terminals of the 9-volt battery and let me know the results, smiley face. Huh. Did you understand any of that?
Yeah.
So, essentially, the energy potential that was in that 9-volt battery, what he did was he changed the energy and he ramped it up to a lot of pressure. And with that pressure, actually got work done. See, that's the thing about voltage that people don't understand. Pressure is what gets things done. Voltage is pressure. And if you have a lot of pressure, then you can fill up an empty container, such as a capacitor or a battery. And the key to free energy is, you know, being able to get around things like Lenz's law, you know, the back EMF and all that kind of stuff that's produced whenever you're trying to, you know, the resistance. So if you got a electric generator and you're trying to pull power off this electric generator, but at the same time you're trying to put power back into this electric generator that is producing a second field, which is now acting as a brake that is slowing down the armature, that means your power input is going to have to work harder to continue to turn that deal, and at some point, then all the losses compiled up will basically cause that generator to fail. It'll fall on its face. It can't overcome the resistance. But if you know how to take that same amount of energy and move it away from the generator, not send it back into the generator, and use this energy to store it into a completely different form that you can then in turn you know, come back and use later as usable current to do work. Well, I did a video here quite some time back called Physics Toy, which is a super simple example of how you can store pressure and how you can actually use that, basically that pressure, like any other power source, like a battery. And essentially in that video, it was nothing more than a bottle that had a balloon inside there. Of course, I had to drill a hole in there, because when you're talking about pressure, if you put a balloon inside the bottle and you try to blow it up, it will meet resistance on the backside, because as that balloon expands, it's compressing the air inside the bottle, and you can only blow the balloon up so far. So you have to figure out a way to release that pressure, and my method of releasing that pressure was to drill a hole in the back of the bottle, and as I'm blowing it up, the balloon will take all the air pressure inside the bottle and force it out of the bottle and allow the balloon to expand to its fullest potential. And so then if you put your finger back over the hole, now you've got a second thing going on, because as the air is trying to expand, trying to escape from the open lid of the container out of the balloon, it is now pulling the balloon backwards, which is producing a vacuum that if you have your finger over that hole will not allow that pressure to escape, and you can sit there all day long with your finger over this hole and the vacuum will hold that pressure inside that balloon. Then you can close the lid on the bottle, and let your finger off of the hole, and you'll actually hear a little go on as you do that, because it now equals out the pressure behind the balloon in the outside atmosphere, and the balloon will stay filled up until you open the lid and release that pressure. So this little toy right here is a prime example of multiple different explanations of types of physics going on in one little deal that I think they ought to make these and put them in schools, man, because it's brilliant. But nonetheless, it shows that any energy out there can be stored. All you have to understand is how to move that energy from one place to the next. And so how does this equate to free energy, you might ask? Well, that's the big question. All right, well, right now, if you take an electric motor and you hook it to a generator head and you try to run it like a standard generator, it will not work. It will produce energy until you put it under a load, and then all the losses will compile until that generator finally becomes so inefficient that it's draining more energy from your battery than you can actually get out the other side. And so another law of physics kicks in where they say you cannot get out more energy than you put in. Well, from what I'm talking about is that you're not trying to get out more energy than you put in. You're trying to utilize this energy in such an efficient manner that you're using all of the energy. It would be the equivalent of taking coffee creamer and in your hand a handful of coffee creamer. It's not going to burn easy. But if you take that coffee creamer and you put it over the top of a lit flame and you sprinkle it down on there, now you'll get this massive release of energy as this coffee creamer catches fire and releases all of its energy. That's just one of many examples. Another example would be the difference between running a vehicle on fumes as opposed to running it on a liquid gasoline stream. You didn't get out more energy than you put in. You just utilized it properly. Does that make sense to you, Justin?
Yep.
So, basically, the reason why all these electric motor generators ended up failing was because when they tried to pull the energy that they just produced off of the generator, they did it in such a fashion to where they had to allow some of that energy to actually go back into the same generator trying to get it from. And after a certain point, the generator can't take it anymore. So, by utilizing this energy in a different manner, now you've got more than enough power to come back around and actually charge the same doggone power source that you're drawing from to begin with. It's not rocket science. It seems to violate the laws of physics, but it doesn't violate the laws of physics. Because if you enact Lenz's law on that, when you induce a current into a coil wire, it produces a second field that in turn causes the thing to bog down. Well, if you never invoke that law of physics there to allow that energy to go back in there, then you have a much more efficient that now you can disperse this energy wherever you want it to go. Does that make any sense to you at all? You got any comments? I'm trying to give you a chance to talk, man.
When we talk about Lenz's law, the units of a circle, it's 12 different states, and most of them don't even apply to alternating current or magnetostriction.
Well, see, here's the deal, man. Everybody, when they think about what the school book said and the mathematics, and that's one of the reasons why a particular individual in the past got so doggone angry, because I had told him that I didn't care about current watts and amps, because what I was doing didn't require that. And it was frequency and pressure that I was dealing with, which those mathematics, they wouldn't even apply at that point in the game. Now, once I take this energy and I change it to something completely different, put it in a storage deal, and then I decide I'm going to start pulling that energy off and utilizing it, now you can put your math back on the table, because now it makes a difference. You see what I'm saying? So
I know a chalk line never lies, and I know math never lies.
What do you mean by that?
Well, when you lay a chalk line down on a board, it's straight. It's never going to lie to you. And I know the math will never lie to you either. It's obtuse as well.
Well, so how's that relevant?
I'm just saying, like you're saying, the math then could be applied.
Yeah.
Well, math will never lie to begin with. I know that.
Well, what I'm saying it is, like, for example, the plasma reactor. And they say, well, you can never get out more energy than you put in. Never said you're getting out more energy than you put in. You're just taking that particular amount of energy and you're changing it to a different form of energy, which at this point in the game, you can't measure plasma with your standard voltmeter. It doesn't work like that. And you have to figure out different ways to measure the frequency of the energy that is coming out the other side, and creative ways to do it, because at the voltage and pressure range, your oscilloscopes aren't safe. You can burn them up with the energy like that, because it's not the same form that you had it before. You understand what I'm saying there? So at that point in the game, the math isn't going to work. Now, if you took all the specifics from the get-go and produced an equation, a mathematical equation, then you could put math specifically for that to measure everything that's going on, volume, pressure, lumens, and BTUs, and so on and so forth. But as far as in electricity or electronics, those maths, they don't work. It's a different type of energy, which now has to have a different type of math to explain what's going on in there. You see what I'm saying?
You see, when it comes to the math, it's all the same. Those digital voltmeters, they're a waste of your time. Take your standard battery, your standard circuit, go out in the garage, make yourself a galvanometer, and learn trigonometry. Because when you make a galvanometer, you're making it to fit the circuit. You see, so if you have something that's high frequency, you just put many more windings on it. And then you can measure the deflection, the angle. And then there you go. Numbers don't lie. You're back to your standard trigonometry. You're your own.
Okay,
voltmeter is not accurate anyways. It don't tell you the truth. It doesn't tell you the true deflection. When you have a galvanometer and it's in before your eyes, you see that pressure. You see the needle move. You see that deflection. You're seeing the circuit actually come to life, and you're using your own calculations. None of that can lie.
Well, yeah, I understand what you're saying, because basically I say the same thing, but I say it in a different manner. If you understand how water pressure and valves and all that work. In the chat room, Stephen Gibbons posted attenuation from Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia. He said this article is about attenuation in physics for other uses. See attenuation,
disambiguation.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Maybe you should have read that out of the chat room. In physics, attenuation, or in some context, extinction is the gradual loss of flux intensity through a medium for resistance. For instance, dark glasses attenuate sunlight. I'm just having a heck of a time. Are you in the chat room over there, Justin?
Just is. No, I'm on my phone.
Oh.
I know you're a musician. I know you play the guitar and stuff. And just like a musician.
Hold on, let me finish reading this out. Hold that thought. Hearing protectors help reduce the acoustic flux from the flowing into the ears. The phenomenon is called acoustic attenuation and is measured in decibels, dBs. In electrical engineering and telecommunications, attenuation affects the propagation of waves and signals in electrical circuits, in optical fiber, and in air. Electrical attenuation and optical attenuators are commonly manufactured components in this field. All right, did you understand any of that?
Well, I acknowledge that you're a musician, and the most important thing in being a musician is holding your pauses and your notes. This is your show, right? This is you. You're coming out, right? Hold your pauses. Pause on those commas. Don't be in a hurry. I get it. But for other people that are, you know, a little slower, hold your pause.
All right. Well, anyway, if you understand how energy travels, and you understand the basics of physics and the basics of science, then you have to come to the conclusion, after seeing a few things like that, that you don't produce energy, you don't create energy. You just change it up a little bit, and you move it from point A to point B while getting work done in between. And so the less work you put on your input source, the better efficiency you're going to get on your output source. That's the simple of it. And so, essentially, if you change that energy to a high voltage, high frequency, you get an energy now that you can utilize for multiple different purposes. One of which, you just produced a lot of pressure that you can pressurize containers with, capacitors or batteries, whatever. And the next one is that the frequency now produces a wave that you can in turn use to energize gas into the fourth state of matter, being plasma, such as in your plasma ball that you see, the nifty toy that you can put your finger on, and a little lightning bolts will follow you around. And my plasma reactor. But also, while energizing that gas into the fourth state of matter, you have something else that is occurring in there. It causes friction, which in turn causes heat. Science says that heat is light and light is heat. So now, you also can throw in there BTUs. Because now there's heat to be measured. So now you got heat, light, pressure, and high voltage that you have access to, pressurized containers or whatever. And if you do this in the most efficient manner to begin with, then there is no losses in the systems, and any losses that would have normally been in the systems, you basically capture the heat, like off the back of a MOSFET. You can reuse that heat that is generated by the MOSFET getting hot. Some of these circuits that, like the Slayer exciter circuit that Ryan Abrams put together for me, that he got, anyway, you hook this thing to a 9-volt battery, and you can run it until that 9-volt battery goes completely dead, and the MOS or the transistor on there will not get hot. There's no load being pulled off of this. It just uses the natural voltage of what that specific transistor needs in order to be able to run it. So the transistor itself won't get hot. And that specific transistor can actually hold a lot more voltage than what I put into the circuit. When you put more current to that particular deal, then it will start to get hot. But nonetheless, at low voltages, was able to run the same circuit and bring the frequency and the voltage up really high. So it makes it really efficient. Stephen Gibbons said, basically, the longer the wire, the more the loss you get in electrics, hence why AC is used, bouncing the signal back and forth rapidly to send electricity further without much loss. And there you go, man. We can even calculate down to the best length of wire and the best gauge of wire, everything.
And you don't lose anything in a wire if you rank up the frequency, the cycles per second. Right? Like in polyphase or three phase system, you have three separate wires, and each wire is at 120 volts. They're 180 degrees phased out, and they're also, each wire is 60 hertz. But when you have three of them combined, it's an equivalent of 180 hertz. You can still pump 180 hertz in a single wire. Therefore, there's less propagation and deflection out into the atmosphere, which makes the magnetic field go smoother, more towards in the wire. That's why our FCC and our ULC laws state that in our airline crafts and our jets, the transformers have to run at a 440 hertz cycle so that there's no magnetic field. It stays within the core. There's no loss.
Well, see, there you go. You hit on a key point right there, and that's this particular energy, it's not going to be resistive, like trying to cram a whole bunch of current through there. When you're cramming a whole bunch of current through there, then obviously you're going to have a side effect, such as your magnetic field beginning to get stronger and escaping from the system. But if all you're doing is moving rapidly voltage down a wire, then you don't produce that massive magnetic field like you would in trying to cram a lot of current through there, and you also don't develop resistance that will cause the thing to get hot. So there's multiple different reasons why you'd want to do it at that hertz range, because you wouldn't want to be messing with any of your electrical appliances. So at some point, they have to be able to change that back into usable voltage and current on the opposite side. You see what I'm saying? So in that aircraft, when they're using those transformers the way that they do, that means that they have something in there that will bring that back down so that your standard equipment will now function without either getting too hot or not functioning at all. You see what I mean?
Well, you see, but that standard equipment, your refrigerator, your stove, you know, those are standard equipment. But when you're making something that is an odd running on standard equipment, everything's a variable. Your fridge is a variable. You can do something else to make the fridge cold, right? You know,
yeah.
You don't have to use the AC system. So an airplane, yeah, their systems, it's all DC.
Well, and so somewhere along that line, they have to have some sort of storage to build up some pressure that they can then in turn turn that pressure back into usable energy again. Because I can't run my refrigerator off of high voltage, high frequency. It's not designed to, because it needs that current flow in order to strengthen the magnetic field to the extent where it'll turn the compressor inside there.
Right, but you see, that's your choice. I could take an NST and get your standard 3/8 copper flex tube, make a black coil, put a piece of wire or a piece of wood over top of it, and put my frying pan on it, and there I go. I cook my eggs on high frequency.
Yeah.
And nothing's hot, and you know what I mean? We have to develop the refrigerator, the stove, and these things for our own home if we want to make these changes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's so basically, right now, what we got is two different types of electricity that we use. We got DC current and we got AC current. All right, and so those are the only two types that are standard out there, and so those were all the math are right there on those two standards. But every single form of energy out there, when the laws of physics says that energy can neither be created nor destroyed, so if I take 9 volts and I produce thousands of volts, I still have the same amount of energy on the other side. I haven't lost anything. I just changed it to a completely different form, that my toaster doesn't understand. But you can take nichrome wire, or you can take tungsten element, and you can put the specific frequency through that element that will cause that element, the electrons inside there, to vibrate so rapidly that they produce friction, which in turn produces heat. And I can run my toaster off of something as simple as a 9-volt battery. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's not violating any of the known laws of physics. It, all it's doing is using that energy in a completely different fashion. And the proof of this, what I'm saying, is that I took a headlamp that was burnt up. The little element, the tungsten element inside the headlamp, was burnt. And so if you hooked it to regular 12-volt DC, it wouldn't run. It's not possible because the circuit is shorted. Well, if you put a higher frequency at a higher voltage through that, then inside that bulb, that energy makes the air and the molecules, the gas inside there, more conductive, and it will literally leap across the gap, and it's still coming in at the same frequency, will vibrate that tungsten so rapidly that it will in turn produce heat and in turn produce light. So I lit up an otherwise bad light bulb with a tungsten element in there in order to use that. I used it as a vacuum spark gap, but nonetheless I still lit up that bulb, and it was a completely different type of energy than that bulb required to run. You see what I'm saying?
Well, it's not a different type of energy. Everything's on a decimal value.
It's at a different frequency. So
frequency, right. When it comes to electricity, everything's, we would say in atomic physics, it's a molecule, right? And how we vibrate it determines everything.
Well, that's the key right there. And like I said, when you're trying to produce a magnetic field, if this energy is going by so fast, and this is why I told people out there, this is the reason why a Slayer exciter circuit will only get wireless transmission so far. And that is because it is happening so fast. A TIP 42C transistor is turning on and off so fast. That field is expanding and collapsing so rapidly, it don't have time to bump that wave out any further. And so no matter how much voltage you put to this, you may get it to go 25 feet. All right, but without some sort of method by which you can guide that wave via a single wire farther down the line, you're never going to get that wave to go any farther than what it's capable of, because it's happening so fast, it's expanding and collapsing so rapidly that the wave can't transmit that far. And proof of what I'm saying is, if you go out and look at AM radio or FM radio, and you see that they got these 50,000 watt towers and they're able to go many miles with that wave, it's because of the way that they're sending that wave out, that they're able to send it at a frequency range by which one wave is pushing the other wave farther and farther out. And even at some point, even those waves will become weaker, and so it's harder to pick up that deal on the other side. You understand what I'm pointing out here?
Inverse square law.
Yeah.
Propagation.
So, what I'm...
Tesla's Wardenclyffe Tower was utilizing analogous currents too. See, if you take that big globe at the top, toroid, whatever you want to call it, and you replace it with a dish that spins around and sends a beam, a directional beam, then you have control over it, just like putting electricity through a wire. Oh, we don't want you to have your cell phone covered no more. Turn it off. It's not analogous. It doesn't go in all directions. It's not free.
Well, either way, all the energy, it's the same doggone energy running at different frequencies. And if you know how to use it, which we do, then there's nobody in this world out there who can tell you that energy's not free. it's ridiculous to say that energy's not free. Anybody out there who tells me that energy is not free has pretty much just told me that they didn't pay attention in school. And proof of what I'm saying is that... Hold on a second. Proof of what I'm saying is that when Ludic Science did this video, he took a 5-volt input on this video. And he was able to produce at least 10,000 volts. There's an actual equation out there that will tell you how far something, how many centimeters or inches or whatever, that the distance that a wave will travel across, the energy will travel across, will tell you how many volts is actually in that. There's an actual mathematical equation to tell you that you basically got 10,000 or above volts by this deal. But he took 5 volts and was able to produce over 10,000 volts using a simple circuit. Now, anybody and his brother can come up with 5 volts. And if you can come up with 5 volts, that means you came up with over 10,000 volts worth of usable pressure. It don't matter if you got one of them little stirrer straws with just a tiny hole in there all the way through that straw. If you tape a balloon to the end of that, you got a constant pressure going in there, even if it's just a steady pressure. If that pressure is able to overcome the resistance of that balloon that is trying to blow up, then that balloon will blow up even at a small volume of pressure. As long as that pressure is higher than the pressure of the actual resistance of the rubber in that balloon and the atmosphere surrounding it, then you can blow that balloon up. So, the reason why in my video I was able to charge a battery up to higher than the input voltage was because I ramped the pressure up to higher than the potential of the battery that I was charging. I took a 7.3-volt battery, and I charged the battery, a nickel metal hydride battery, up to 8.5 volts. And before I did the video, I actually charged one up to complete 9 volts. But because of the size of the file that I was creating by my video being 16 minutes or longer, I went ahead and stopped it at 8.5 volts because by that time I'd done proved my point. I just took 7.3 volts, and I pressurized the next battery up to 8.5 volts. Now, according to the standard laws of physics and measurements and all that, that's not supposed to be possible. But that's because you aren't calculating in the actual pressure involved in that voltage. Normally, it would have taken a little bit of current flow. If you take a look at any battery charger out there, they always tell you how many amps. I got a 6-amp charger that I use to charge up car batteries. It doesn't matter. I don't need 6 amps to charge that car battery. All I need is my output pressure to be higher than the potential pressure that is in the battery that I'm charging. Does that make any sense to you?
Makes sense to me.
How you doing, Raymond? Raymond!
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
Oh, excellent. I just got up a few minutes ago. I've been sitting here listening to you guys for the past 15, 20 minutes, and I've decided to join in just in case I had something to say.
Cool. Well, we're pretty much on the same plane of existence as far as understanding. We're just wiggling through some terminology at this point in the game.
Well, I didn't join in at first because I'm not, like I said, I've said many, many times, I'm not an electronic type person.
Can you come a little closer to your mic?
Yeah, how's that?
Yeah, that's better.
Alright, well, I got a headset now so you don't hear all this ruckus going on with my industrial air conditioner and stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
All right. Anyway, at the first, you guys were talking about stuff I didn't truly understand, but now you're getting into the realm of my understanding. Yeah, pressure, duh. I mean, you know, come on, man. You cannot take a 50 PSI air tank and take the air out of it and put it into a 100 PSI air tank by itself. You've got to put in some power to take the air out of the 50 PSI and put it in the 100 PSI. However, you can take some of the 100 PSI air tank and put it into the 50 PSI air tank.
Yep. And when
your
both
tanks are exactly the same size, then what you're going to do is you're going to drain them off until they equal out at 75 PSI.
Yep.
I mean, you know, to anybody that has any understanding whatsoever of physics, it only makes sense. And so what you're doing is you're, like you did on that experiment with the 7.3 volt battery, and you ran it through a, I don't know what it was. You said circuit, but I'm thinking transistor to...
well, in that video, I ran it...
Run it through a
motor controller.
Then run it through a transformer, which could actually increase the voltage, and you got it up to, 250 volts or something like that? But
yes,
extremely low amperage, so therefore you could actually put 250 volts in a 12-volt battery or 9-volt battery, whatever, that's lower than 9 volts, lower than 7.3, it would go, but the amperage would be so low it would not burn it up, because in increasing the voltage, you decrease the amperage, therefore you're done away with the heat, so you're slamming all this pressure in, but with no heat.
There you go.
It stands to reason. Just think about it.
There
That's
you
all
go.
You got to do is stop and think about it.
Well, in our founding systems in the beginning of our architects, Joseph Henry was the one that created the iron horseshoe magnet, electromagnet specifically. When you induce an iron core with voltage, the magnetic field of that core, the amplitude is greater by thousands of times.
Right.
And you can read that in any university, college, even online, you can find all of that under inductors. Right?
Right.
So, yeah, you do have a gain there.
So would I be wrong to say that it isn't that we don't have free energy, it's that we aren't using the energy properly.
Correctly, yes.
Exactly.
And like, when I was trying to interrupt you there earlier, Shaziz, free energy, to me, anything we put our mind to, we can create. It's the time, and the time that we emit, and emit backwards is time. So, yeah, okay, I go to work, I trade 40 hours for a couple bucks, I create this thing, cool. I'm just trading time, that's all. I'm an electron here doing the same thing, I'm just shifting things around. If I want to choose to stop and do that or whatever, right?
Exactly.
But if you add more electrons together, you get work done faster.
It does not matter at the end of the day of that hobby or whatever you want to do, or that inventive spirit that one is, creates $1,000 windmill, but now that $1,000 windmill, after that's created, it produces power for the rest of my life if I made it properly.
Yeah.
If you made it properly, correct. Exactly.
And so,
look at
the energy's there. Are we using it at its efficiency.
There you go. That's what I've been trying to shout to all four points of the compass. People don't get it. I don't understand why. But to me, it's simple. Raymond, I'm posting a link inside this chat. Raymond?
Yes, sir.
I'm posting a link to a diagram of a simple circuit. I think I posted it over to you personally as well, but this is a diagram of a flyback driver with only two components that Ludic Science put together, and it's the simplest circuit. If you understand anything about electronics, it is a super simple circuit, period. Even if you don't, I can explain it to you in a fashion which it makes sense. In this picture, you got a power source, and basically you've got a coil, which in this diagram he has a center tap coil, which is six turns on each side, and it's actually got the positive side in the center tap, which is going to cause that wave to expand out in two separate directions at the same time, which is brilliant. But nonetheless, you got a MOSFET in there, and then he even puts in the deal. I ordered 10 of them off eBay, and he has a resistor in there. The MOSFET is nothing more than a really fast-acting switch. When the power from the battery goes to the MOSFET and goes to makes the circuit over there, it causes enough heat to change the conductivity of the switch and allows current to flow through the opposite side, making the complete circuit. And so when the temperature or the voltage or current is high enough on the one side, it makes it conductive and it opens and closes the switch accordingly, and it does it so fast that it produces a field which energizes the secondary, which is the high voltage side of the flyback transformer. This is really super brilliant. It's no different than going over to your light switch and flipping your light switch on and off. It's no different than a pressure valve in a plumbing. You know, when the pressure gets high enough on one side, it opens up the gate and allows the water to go through. That's it. It's just a fast acting switch. He did this in his video at 5 volts and produced over 10,000 volts. 10,000 volts is a lot of pressure.
Yeah, it is.
You can charge a capacitor so rapidly with that kind of pressure that it's crazy. If you got an empty container that is able to hold 300 volts of electrical current, electrical power potential, whatever, you got a capacitor that is rated at 300 volts, and you got 10,000 volts of pressure to shove in that 300 volts of pressure, it's the same example that you gave of the 100 PSI air compressor and the 50 PSI air compressor. It only takes 50 PSI to fill this one up, but you have 100 potential on this side. You can take that 100 and you can fill that up. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense.
So, if you got 10,000 volts worth of pressure, and you only have a 300 volt capacitor to fill up, how fast could you fill that capacitor?
Real fast.
Right.
Really fast.
So, and he did that with only 5 volts. And if anybody out there can't come up with 5 volts, I mean, you could take a couple Earth battery technologies and produce 5 volts, and you can even set it to the right current necessary to run the doggone transistor. You can make a chemical battery that will come up with 5 volts. And then on the opposite side, you're getting 10,000 volts worth of pressure. Now, like I've said so many times before, and I've been trying to tell people this for God knows how many years, you can't run your house on plasma. Alright? It just can't be done. Your toaster, your refrigerator, all your appliances were not designed to run on plasma. They were designed to run on current, resistance, and so on. And so, when you try to run, you plug your deal into the plasma, you're going to get energy potential going through that wire, but it's not going to be at the range of what it has to be, the 50 or 60 hertz necessary to pulse those coils to do the work that you want done. However, that energy that you put in to produce that plasma is still there. You have same amount of energy potential you started with, it's still there. And if you know how to use that energy properly, you can take that plasma, you can turn it into heat, you can turn it into light, you can turn it into pressure and high voltage at specific frequencies, and you can turn that energy, store it in their prospective containers, and then reuse that energy on the other side. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
So that's what I've been trying to say for a long time. You can't run your house on high voltage. You wasn't designed to run on high voltage. But you can take that high voltage and you can produce enough pressure to charge up a capacitor bank and then bleed that capacitor bank directly right into a battery, because when that battery is already connected, what's going to happen here is the higher pressure potential is going to want to flow and fill up the lower pressure. It's just going to try to equal itself out. If there ain't enough room in that battery for 1,000 PSI, if there ain't enough room in that air tank for 1,000 PSI, there's only 50 there. You got 1,000 PSI you're trying to put into a 50 PSI. Well, what do you think's going to happen? If this thing can only hold a 50 PSI, and you have 1,000 tank PSI on the opposite side, if you connect these two together, and you allow that energy to try to transfer the 1,000 to the 50, and so that they can balance themselves out, once it gets to the 50, and the 50 can't take anymore, and there's so much pressure behind there, you're going to kick a release valve that will release that pressure trying to enter that 50 PSI. Otherwise, you get an explosion. Am I wrong?
I'm not sure if I understand exactly what you're saying, because you keep talking about the size of the tank. It's not the size, it's the strength.
The volume. I mean, that's another factor.
Wait. What I'm trying to say is a tank designed to hold 50 PSI can actually hold 50 gallons or 1,000 gallons.
Sure, but what I'm saying is that let's hypothetically, we're saying that this tank can only hold 50 PSI. 50 anything PSI. Anything right, above 50 PSI, and something has to give.
Okay, that's the point I was trying to make right now. Let's just say, for example, you have a 100-gallon tank that's designed to hold 1,000 PSI. But you have a 1,000-gallon tank that's designed to hold 50 PSI. You could take all of that 1,000 PSI and put it in that 50 PSI tank. But now it's only 50 PSI. You see what I'm saying? But you got the volume.
Yeah, but see,
what I'm trying to say is I agree with you. But I think we've got the terminology off just a little bit. I don't want to get people out there that are listening confused.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not saying that.
Right.
With air compressors, they're going to have safety like an actual car tire. You can actually air a car tire up to 300 PSI before it pops.
Right.
But that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if you got a specific container that only can hold up to a specific pressure. If you got a higher pressure on one side, when you allow that pressure to flow to try to balance these two tanks out together, if the one doesn't give, then you get a result. Well, yeah,
exactly. That's my point. That's my point. Exactly. You're right on the nose now.
But either way, if I got 1,000 pounds of pressure, 1,000 volts worth of pressure, and I'm only trying to charge a 50 volt capacitor up, I can charge that 50 volt capacitor up rapidly.
Real rapid.
And I can charge it up to such an extent that if I don't use that energy, that I destroy that capacitor. Well, here's the kicker. I need to be able to use that energy on demand. So if that 1,000...
Now you're cooking.
If that 1,000 volts on the other side stays continuous, then I got 50 volts that I have access to of pressurized power coming out of there.
Exactly.
That's what I did in the video that I called unsubscribe, because I got tired of people not understanding something as simple as that concept right there. You keep blowing a balloon up, and if you don't stop blowing the balloon up, it pops.
You're cooking with grease now, son.
Maybe because they're looking for something that's really out of the norm or mysterious.
Yeah, well,
right. Bizarre.
That's it.
Right?
Right.
And they're trying, you know, they're trying to conjure something out of their mind, and they're the ones that are looking for things that are out of the world, right?
Yep.
Right.
And they're not looking at what's in
I'm trying to put it in such a simple fashion. I'm trying to prove to the world that energy is free in such a simple fashion that the average Joe can understand it. So, there you go, man.
You know, you've been running this show for many more years than I've been on it with you. And your thing is, you keep saying you want to prove free energy. So
I've already done it
150 times. I mean, you've proven free energy. There is no such thing as energy that is not free. It's how you use it.
That's the whole key.
Come on, man.
So, basically, folks, if you're listening in, jump over there to ShazizRadio.com, and there's an image on there that shows a simple circuit. It's from Ludic Science, and I made sure that you can see on there. I'm subscribed to Ludic Science. He does things, and he does it in such a simple fashion that I love the guy's work, because if you can't understand this, you're not paying attention. He makes it so easy.
I've said it over and over again. I'm not an electronics type person, but I'm sitting here looking at this diagram, and I mean, it is truly so simple, I fully understand it.
Well, there you go, and you can take this right here, and you can make this circuit, because it shows you exactly how to do it. Just follow the lines and hook it up just like you see right there, and you can test for yourself the concept of what it is that I'm saying. And if you understand on the capacitor, there's two different types of capacitors. There's an AC capacitor, there's a DC capacitor. If you want to try to store this one, the best one for you to store it would be in the AC or the DC capacitor, but you can store in an AC capacitor as well. All a capacitor is two separate plates, and all you're going to do is charge one side of the plate higher than the other. So on the capacitor, there will be a plus and a minus, and you just put that in its perspective order, and you can charge that capacitor with the output voltage going on out there. And if you tap this puppy into the earth ground, that's how I burn up my $85 Beckett oil burner igniter, because it pulled so much energy up out of the dirt that it caught fire. So, I know that if you take this design right here, this little simple design, and just do experiments with it. Take any electric motor you can get your hands on. Take any transformer you can get your hands on. It doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter the number of turns or anything like that, because even with the thickest gauge wire, by pulsing that coil properly, you can get a flyback on that will be incredible voltages. And even if you only got one single magnetic ballast that only has two wires, when you pulse the when the switch comes on, you make a magnetic field, and when that field collapses, it's going to send energy back the other direction. That if you got diodes in the system, you can guide that pass those diodes back around into a battery source, and you can just use the flyback alone to charge your batteries through a DC rectifier. It's so ridiculously simple, and you can turn any electric motor out there into a generator. You can turn any transformer into a generator. You can turn any coil of wire into the generator. You can make your own coils of wire. You can make your own cores. You can take metal shavings and epoxy resin and mix it all together and make whatever shape a core you want. And you can build your own transformers. You can take two microwave oven transformers out of a couple old microwaves, and you can literally take two identical ones of these, put them back to back, and either bolt them together or spot weld them together, and now you have a high voltage power source of epic proportions. The magnetic flux off of one will literally transmit all the way through to the other. You can pulse two for the price of one. It's that simple. It is so ridiculously simple. And the whole concept of even using the coils and the transformers or whatever is because that's what we standardly use as transformers and electrical generator heads and motors and whatever. However, if you make a rotary switch that basically acts faster than you can turn a switch off and on, if you take a little electric motor and you got a little cam lobe that goes around and touches an old point system, then it's every time that cam comes around on the high side and it opens and closes that switch and makes a connection in between that and the power source, that is how your old distributors in your old cars used to function with a point system. It was just nothing more than a fast-acting switch that sent that energy through a coil of wire that in turn send that high voltage up the wire down into your spark plug and ignited your fuel. It's not new technology. It's been around since the Model T, man. High voltage, Raymond. Justin.
Yep. Just like a magneto.
That's what I said on my dang YouTube channel, the home of high voltage. I knew it. I knew it way back before I ever even started my doggone YouTube channel that high voltage was the key. Because yep. In science and in electronics and physics, they said pressure is what gets work done. And so I'm thinking, in my mind, I'm thinking, why are we using so much current flow that we know is damaging to whatever it is that we're running? If you got too much current going to electric motor, you burn the doggone thing up. And if you only need the pressure to do it, then why not find the sweet spot in that motor to where you get that motor to run at its maximum without having to use near the current flow that we're trying to cram into it? You see what I mean?
Yep, I do.
So, before your eyes right there is literally the key to free energy if you're willing to take it to where you need to go. You know how much voltage you need to run your appliances and stuff like that, and so you'll have to do the mathematical calculations to decide how large of a storage bank that you want to build and how large of a battery bank. And that's the only reason for the storage bank and the battery bank is because this energy will not run your house as it stands. You have to take this energy in a form of high voltage, high frequency, high pressure, store that energy, and then bring that energy back down into a usable current that will run your inverters that then in turn will run your house. And you got to calculate in the size of the storage bank necessary to always make sure that the pressure on this side is higher than your battery potential, that is more than enough for your inverters to run continuously without having to shut down. So essentially, you're going to use pressure, the physics of pressure, volume, and frequency, and what was the other one I posted in the chat room? Let's see, we got resistance. Resistance, volume, frequency, and pressure. And once you understand all those definitions and you understand how energy travels, then you understand how to actually build a free energy device for your house using nothing more than junk that is readily available. One of them X13 motors that you sent over to me, Raymond, is more than enough to run a house.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
So, if you take that energy off there properly and utilize it in the manner at which I'm sitting here explaining to everybody, then you can pressurize a large enough container that goes into a smaller container being your battery banks, and your battery banks will have the on-demand pressure necessary to run those inverters, period. I'm going to try to add Muddy to the call. Just saw him come in there. So what's your thoughts on it? Anybody?
I think you're right. I've seen what you've done. I have seen it.
Muddy, you there? It says user's not online, but it shows him online. Huh. Anyway, I don't know if I'm going to be able to add him.
Okay.
So, basically, everything necessary to produce free energy has been there all along. Everyone out there is trying to look for the holy grail of zero point, over unity. We don't need more than we put in order to get free electricity. We don't need it. We never did. It's not that we don't have enough energy already, it's that we're not using it properly.
Exactly.
That's the whole key. And when you buy your energy from the power company, they're making a killing because you're using it improperly.
You know, when I was younger, before computers were even built, the very first computer ever built, they didn't have fuel-injected systems for automobiles, but they had a carburation system. And I used to read encyclopedias a lot. And in black and white, in the Americana encyclopedia, it said, in reference to carburetors, the modern-day carburation system on an automobile is the most, the absolute most inefficient carburation system ever devised by man.
Yeah.
Now, if it's the most inefficient, what does that mean? That means it can be improved on.
Yep.
Now, the back then was the modern carburation system, and today's fuel injection system is exactly the same thing. They are both extremely inefficient because they use liquid gasoline, and everybody that knows anything knows that liquids don't burn. The fumes from the liquid can burn.
Yep. That's a whole.
So, that's why are we using a carburetor that puts liquid vapor into your engine? It will not burn.
So
because
this is
the very, very first gasoline engines ever run didn't even use a carburetor. They were one-cylinder pony engines used in factories like sawmills and so forth. And they burnt fumes, gasoline fumes only. 10-15 gallons of gasoline turned into fumes would run a large sawmill 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, for a month. Yet you take an automobile and you start throwing liquid gasoline in it, you're only burning what little bit of fumes comes from it, and you're throwing the other liquid that did not turn into fumes out your exhaust pipe. So you're running down the highway, and in 2-3 hours' time, you burn up 5 gallons of gasoline.
Well, the same doggone concept applies in electricity. And
all right,
wait,
I back up. I made a mistake. I said you burnt the gasoline. No.
You wasted a lot of it.
You fumes, and you threw the gasoline that you did not burn out into the air onto the highway.
Yeah, and that's what you're doing with electricity. When you got a transformer and you're trying to produce, you're trying to cram a lot of current through that transformer, you lose the energy in heat. You lose the energy in the magnetic flux that's extending past the doggone transformer. You don't have to have it extending past the transformer.
Exactly.
But if you take the same doggone energy and you use it in a different manner, we could actually design motors that were specifically designed to run on high voltage.
Right.
It's as simple as that. And with that said, high voltage is really super simple to produce. That rotary switch that I was talking about would turn any battery or power source into a high voltage power source, because all you're doing is taking your storage, whatever power you got as your storage, and you're turning the switch on and off, and basically at whatever frequency ramping up the voltage.
Right.
Looks like Justin dropped off, Jermaine dropped off. They're all in the mad science room having fun.
There you go.
So, this circuit, I'm going to build a bunch of these little circuits like this, and I'm going to pulse different coils to see which one of these coils are the most efficient in producing high voltage, which is all that I need to do whatever it is that I want to do. And then I'm actually going to build a custom version of a supercapacitor that I'm surprised that nobody's ever even tried before, because glass is one of the best insulators. It's also one of the best, what do you call that in between two plates for a capacitor, a dielectric, is that what it is?
Right.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to find the finest grain sand that I can find, and I'm going to get some mineral oil, and I'm going to build a capacitor using sand, mineral oil, and two separate plates of aluminum, and make the simplest capacitor that I can possibly imagine using those parts right there.
Yeah.
See, when you got glass, energy can actually travel through the glass, but it's a better dielectric than, let's say, wax paper or any other paper.
Right.
Because it will hold up longer for those two plates that they get overpressurized to actually bleed off to each other and try to balance each other out. So with glass, if you charge a capacitor that had glass in between the plates, it would stay charged a lot longer than it would if it had wax paper in between.
Oh, yeah.
So, if I built one using mineral oil is non-conductive. And
correct.
Sand is basically the equivalence of glass. So, the two...
Mineral oil is not only non-conductive, but it can withstand more heat than water.
Yeah. And so, I would be able to have a capacitor that I could charge up to really ridiculous voltages.
Really ridiculous.
And so I could take a 50-gallon drum and cut me some plates out that would fit inside that 50-gallon drum and put a plate down, put a layer of sand, then another plate, and then another layer of sand, and so on and so forth, and then fill that entire drum up with... mineral oil, and I would have a super capacitor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you would.
Be able to
yeah, you would.
Be able to store a lightning bolt, man.
Well, that's the whole thing is, that's my pet peeve right there. You just said something here. That is my pet peeve. Everybody wants to grab a lightning bolt. No. The cloud and the earth are two clouds. Differently charged are a capacitor. You don't have to drain a capacitor as a spark. You can put a resistor on it and take some of the energy out of it without creating that spark.
Yep.
That spark is dangerous. It can hurt you.
That's why they have them doggone guide wires on all these tall poles. It's not just for the fact that they need to try to stabilize this tall pole. It's also because the higher you get up off the ground, the higher the voltage, and that atmosphere rubbing up against that deal, it'll charge that pole up. And if it's not connected directly to the earth ground, and you walk over there and you're grounded and you touch that sucker, it'll lay you out, man.
It'll put your dink in your watch pocket, I guarantee you.
Yeah, and so they have to be grounded. All those antennas have to be grounded.
Well, you know, that's another pet peeve of mine. Why do they have to be grounded? Why can't they be insulated? And then that high-powered, high-voltage energy, like you said, be stored in a capacitor.
There you go. We got the infrastructure with just a few modifications. We could turn every single radio tower out there into a free energy source.
Yes. Absolutely.
Because
the metal towers that hold up the actual high-powered lines on the grid?
Yeah.
Every one of those are grounded.
Yep.
Because they're producing static electricity.
So
I mean, yeah, come on. The flagpole in front of your city's library is grounded because it's metal. And it's producing electricity. And if it wasn't grounded, again, if you touch it, it's going to take your hair stand on end, if not knock you out flat cold on the ground.
Somebody look up the equation for how many feet off of the ground that the voltage raises up.
I think you once said somewhere around 250 feet is like over 3,000 volts or some crap like that.
Well, I know that at the atmospheric grip, they've got... 200 and some odd foot poles, and they got wire with nanocarbon around the wire to basically bring down over 2,000 volts of electricity, and then they turn that 2,000 volts pressure into 9,000 volts on the opposite side. So
right.
They're pulling 9,000 volts out of the air, man.
Right.
And
now you put that through that circuit you're talking about.
Yeah.
You put it into a capacitor. Now you've got absolute free energy.
Yeah.
You didn't create it. You did not create energy from nothing. You took what was there and stored it to where and made it make it into a usable form of electricity.
Yep.
That's you didn't create it from nothing.
So if you find
it was
that
there.
If you find that mathematical equation, then you could literally do an experiment yourself by building you a tower and understanding how that actually functions, that you don't want to the tower to be grounded until you choose to ground it. So let's say I take a piece of PVC plumbing and I can get it up to the very first height that the actual static electricity becomes, let's say 10 volts. Alright? If I get this up high enough to where I can pull 10 volts of that energy out, and I run a wire up to the top of the PVC and then down before I actually get to the ground, that I have a spark gap in there, and then the other side of the spark gap is actually grounded to the ground. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
Then you put a capacitor in between there, and you can get this capacitor to stay charged just by using that equation and knowing how high you need to be off the ground in order to do so. And people
really, it wouldn't take that much height, should it? Think about it.
No.
Because I mean, you took 7.3 volts and turned it into 250.
Yep.
And with that, you charged another battery. I mean, come on, you wouldn't have to be that high at all. If you could get it up high enough, you get 5 or 6 volts. You could do exactly what you're talking about.
Yep.
And I don't think you'd have to get very high to get that 5 volts.
It looks like Stephen posted a video in the chat room of how to calculate out the voltages there.
Okay.
I don't want to play it live on here, but we'll look at it later and actually get the numbers and post it in the chat room so that everybody can see how many feet off the ground. For every so many feet, you get like 100 volts increase, and the higher you get up there, the higher the potential. So,
now, is it directly proportional, or is it what's the proper word? Exponential.
It gets higher. I don't know.
In other words, what I'm trying to say is, that if at 10 feet you get 1 volt, does that mean at 20 feet you're going to get 2 volts, or are you going to get 2.5 or 2.25?
Don't know. That's okay. Why I need to find that equation again. I used to have it, but
I don't know if it's exponential or directly proportional.
Yeah, I think it might be proportional, but if not, that's even better because that means you get more the higher you go up.
Right, but right.
Keep
exactly.
in mind that if you're only getting 10 volts of pressure, then you only want to charge a lower container that will like 5 volts of pressure. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean,
right.
You could actually charge a 9 volt capacitor with it if you've got 10 volts worth of pressure, but for speed wise and on demand, you see what I'm saying?
Yes. In other words, if you have 10 volts, then you simply run that through a transistor so it'll pulsate because it will be constant. It pulsates, then you run it through a 2-to-1 transformer, and now you have 20 volts.
Holy smoke, Stephen posted in the chat room, if that's right, boy, I'll tell you what. He said 100 volts per yard.
100 volts for what?
Per yard.
No, it can't be.
That's what it said. I don't know if it's right, but that would be, man, 3 feet off the ground?
Yeah, really.
I don't know, but there's a lot of energy in the atmosphere, and if the atmosphere is blowing by it at all times, it wouldn't surprise me none, because if you actually think about whenever you're picking static electricity up on your socks as you're going through the house, and you build that potential up, there's quite a bit of voltage that jumps across your finger to your brother's ear.
Right.
Anyway, I don't know. That's basically what he put in here. I'll have to look at see if I can find it. But nonetheless, it's still energy potential that once you get those numbers down, then you can go from there. You know, if you have a 10-foot pole and it's only producing, I'm just going to say 10 volts, but even at that, if it's only producing 10 volts, then you could bring this down. If you charge a 5-volt capacitor, it'll take you a certain period of time to charge that 5 volts. But if you take that same power potential, the 10-volt potential, and you charge a 2-volt, it's obvious that 2-volt is going to charge a lot quicker. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And so with that said, it may be a case of you got a bunch of 2-volt in series to finally equal out to some usable current at a larger rate. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So, it's using the mechanics of how everything's coming down to, and how, you know, the difference between things set in parallel or things set in series to bring the voltage up.
You know, here's the question. Is it the actual height, or is that the length of the wire?
Well, that's a good question, because if you took more surface area, which is what Tesla's radiant energy patent had to deal with, is that you take a big metal plate and you put it up on a pole, and then you got one wire coming down, and you got a spark gap from the ground to the other wire that you got connected to the plate. That surface area allows you to grab up more energy. So Tesla.
Well, you know, the thing is, I saw a video. A guy was doing some stuff, and I watched several other of his videos, and I'm pretty sure he wasn't trying to pull a joke on anybody. But he took a bunch of enameled wire, and he lived out in the desert. You could see his background, okay? And whether it was Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, I don't know. But he was definitely a desert area. It was dry. And he took an enameled wire and ran it from one bush to another bush to another bush to a tree to another bush. I mean, we're talking horizontal. We're not talking vertical here.
Yeah.
And he was getting unbelievable voltage, very low amperage, and he hooked up a little circuit deal like you were doing. This sucker was actually rotating a 110-volt motor. Hey, true, it was running really slow, but it was running that motor.
That's right. And if you stored that potential and you doubled up on it, you could get it to run even faster.
Yeah, you're talking about 1,725 RPM motor running at about 10 or 15 RPM, but it was still running. That's my whole point. It was working.
All right, he said that 120 meters at 390 feet equals 12 kV.
Oh, okay, now you're talking.
There you go, man.
And I got a sneaky feeling it doesn't matter whether you're straight up or horizontal.
Yep. And if you had
back and forth horizontal.
If you had the proper insulated wire, and you had access to a mountain and enough wire to go from the top of that mountain all the way down to your house, and then plug one side in the ground, what kind of voltage do you think you're going to get? 10,000 feet.
A lot.
And
you know, actually, what you just said, something about the insulation on the wire.
Yeah.
The only purpose for insulating the wire is so that the oxygen and moisture in the air doesn't cause the wire to corrode.
Well, it also keeps high voltages from actually transferring through and shorting itself out. So if you had just a bare wire going all the way up there, it would be arcing to the ground at the shortest length. So if one of them was, like, say, touching a rock or, you know, a water drop or whatever, then you wouldn't be able to transmit that power that far. But if you had it insulated, that would keep any potential ground from making contact and bring it all the way down to where you wanted it. And that's the same.
That sounds interesting, except for one thing.
What?
Most insulations, generally speaking, are only good for like 600 volts. And you're talking 2,000 or 3,000 volts here.
Well, if you look in the back of your TV, there is specific wire that has high voltage insulation that will handle 2,000 volts.
Okay. Alright.
Yeah. So, that's the key, man. But, the thing about it is, if you understand that voltage is only pressure, then you understand that you cannot run your house off of that alone. You have to take that pressure, store it into a potential that is already connected to your battery bank, that's already connected to your inverter, that's connected to your load, and as long as that potential stays higher all the way down the stage, the voltage input is higher than the capacitor capacity, and the capacitor capacity is higher than the battery capacity, then that battery will stay fully charged as long as all those things, those factors remain the same on the opposite side. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do. Yes.
That's how I was able to charge a battery, a nickel metal hydride battery, to 8.5 volts, starting only with 7.3 volts. And in the process of doing that, I only lost 0.3 of a volt. That's it. That's all I used to charge that battery.
Actually, it wasn't 0.3 volts. It was more like 0.25 because it kept bouncing.
Well, either way, less than a volt.
It bounced between 7 and 7.1. Back and forth, almost even bouncing, which means it was 7.5, and 7.5 from 7.3 would be actually 0.25 volts. I mean, yeah, 0.25. So you actually used less electricity than you thought you did.
Yeah. So if you took this circuit that Ludic Science put together, which is a really ridiculously simple circuit, and you took the concept of what I showed in that video, and you took this high voltage equation that would tell you how high you go for how many volts, and you did the math, and you always ensured that the pressure on this side was higher than the next one down, and then that was higher than the one down below that before it finally gets to your circuit. You could literally run Ludic Science circuit on demand. That means it wouldn't stop. It would continue to run because you'd have all the energy necessary to run it. You'd be able to run it on demand with nothing more than the atmospheric pressure alone.
Yep.
And once you got that figured out, you know, when they figured out they could use solar panels, and they figured out they needed more volume and pressure than what one solar panel could handle at certain wattage, then they added another one. And then they added another one until they had these huge banks. So you could take and do the same thing with a static deal that would pull air energy right out of the doggone air, and all it is voltage and pressure, and that voltage and pressure being stored, which now you have power potential because an 800 microfarad capacitor will blow your thumb right off your hand. No ifs, ands, or buts. I welded a screwdriver with an 800 microfarad capacitor. My wife thought there was it sounded like a shotgun going off in my lab. That's how much power was released whenever I shorted that thing out with the screwdriver.
Lord have mercy.
Tell me I don't know what I'm talking about.
You don't know what you're talking about, man.
That's right, I don't. But I'm gonna have my house running off of free energy regardless. Hey, I don't know what I'm talking about, but you're still paying electric bill. I ain't.
Hey, guess what?
What?
You said a mouthful a minute ago when you were talking about when they first developed solar panels.
Yep.
Well, I mean, duh, he put out electricity, but it wasn't enough to use. So what'd they do? They added more solar panels, right?
Yeah, because they needed...
This thing you're talking about is exactly the same thing. You take one wire, you run it at 330 feet or whatever, and you're going to get so many volts, so many amps, whatever, I don't care. Oh, it's total, you can't use that. We'll build more, dummy.
Yeah, and the reason why they needed so much was because the system they were trying to run was an energy hog. And it, had they to understood that I can take a 200 watt solar panel that basically is all broken up, and I can use voltage alone to pressurize old dead car batteries using them as capacitors and keep a load running continuously with something that would have otherwise been trash. So if I took that same panel, which there are three wires on the back of that. One is set up for, I think it's like 24 volts, and one set up for over that, and then you can actually get over 100 and some odd volts out of one solar panel. That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Right? And they use this to add all these together to be able to run energy hogs that we run, which we call our appliances.
Right.
And if all I need is 5 volts to run my toaster, then wouldn't that be a lot better than using 120 volts to run it?
Yeah, why not?
Well, a Slayer exciter circuit will run at 3 volts.
Yep.
And at the right frequency, that will vibrate the nichrome wire in the toaster. And
right.
That will cause that nichrome wire and toaster to get hot, and it will cook my toast. So, there you go, man. What do you think? I think it's time for a music break.
Hello.
I gotta give my brain a...
Huh?
Yeah. Alright,
no,
folks, you're listening to Mad Science.
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Because when them old boys raise on shotguns, from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beech nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can.
in South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Hello, everybody. We're back. And so, for those of you that are still sticking in there with us, you know, now that we're past the boring point, what I'm trying to say is that literally... we're giving you the answer right now to free energy if you choose to take it to where it got to go. You can take any DC power source and you can turn it into AC current using switching methods. One of the switching methods we posted into the chat room there, which essentially was a flyback driver circuit that Ludic Science put out there, super simple understanding on how to put that together, and all it's doing is taking a DC power source and pulsing it rapidly, and whether you want to call it pulse DC on the opposite side or pulse AC, it's just mincing words at that point, because what you're doing is you're producing an intermittent wave that is producing a magnetic field that is energizing a ferrite core, which is energizing a secondary that is wound specifically for high voltage. The same circuit can pulse a one-to-one transformer or whatever type of transformer, step up or step down, whichever one that you need or whatever. But that is one method of switching a power source on and off so rapidly that is taking that energy and pulsing through a coil and using induction to literally produce electricity. And the other method that I happened to briefly mention earlier was to build a basically what they call a commutator or a rotary switch that basically when it's spinning around, it'll make and break a contact, just like the old distributors in your car. So you could turn any old car battery with any mechanical or solid state switching device into essentially an inverter, changing DC current into AC current or even pulse DC so that you can run your AC appliances. So, you follow me there so far, Raymond?
Yeah, I'm sitting here staring at this diagram that you put on the chat room right there.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, what we were talking about as far as running a copper wire or any kind of wire, actually, it doesn't even have to be copper.
No.
If you stop and think about it. If you take that battery out of the diagram and then hook it up to this apparatus we're talking about, it'd be the same thing.
Yeah. It doesn't matter where the energy comes from. It as long as you got enough on demand to run the deal we were talking about, like if you replace that battery with a capacitor and you had the calculation for how far you had to be a high, how high in the air, when that static energy was picked up from the upper atmosphere and then down and charging that battery on demand, if it has enough power potential to run that MOSFET, then it would literally pulse that coil just like it was charged up with a battery.
All right. Again, I would like to find out for sure, is it how high you go or is it the length of the wire?
Well, according to Tesla's radiant energy patent, it doesn't look like height is even a matter.
Right, that's my point.
Because surface area is what Tesla always talked about. Surface area
right.
Gives you a whole lot of surface tension, which is a whole lot of pressure. When that pressure builds up higher than the atmosphere surrounding it, then you get breakout from that high voltage trying to find a path to ground.
All right, now, so, for example, if you take a big sheet of metal, right, say, for example, 4 foot by 10 foot.
Yeah.
And you put it on plastic pipes, so it'd be insulated from the ground, hook the wire to it, then hook another wire to the ground, but in between, you put this thing that you're, this diagram that you drew, duh, it'd be making electricity, right?
There you go. And
but if the wind come up, now all of a sudden you've got 40 square feet. And what I'm getting at is that a 15-mile-an-hour wind exerts 1 pound of force per square foot. So a 30-mile-an-hour wind, you'd have 80 pounds of force pushing on this sheet of metal. So instead of a sheet of metal, let's take fence wire. Say, like, for example, 2x4 normal fence wire, 4 foot high. Now, you'd have to have a whole lot more linear footage to get your surface area. But the wind wouldn't be blowing it all around and trying to tear your poles down either, would it?
No. But you could also use aerodynamics to make the doggone deal. Instead of putting it facing the wind, you could have it cutting through the wind. So you could get
exactly
it to blow right on by. And
exactly.
If you want to be creative about it, when the wind starts blowing at that sheet metal, it's going to cause that sheet metal vibrating back and forth and make all kinds of racket. Well, you got piezoelectrics on the opposite side of it, and those piezoelectrics, while they're being flexed by that sheet metal that they're glued to, will produce electricity. And on the opposite side, you could have Peltier elements, because as that friction is wobbling that metal back and forth, it's going to produce heat in that metal, which in turn could be transferred through the Peltier element, and the temperature difference of the wind blowing across the heat sinks on the opposite side would produce yet even more electricity.
Exactly. Again, what did we say? I mean, look, it's not whether the energy is free or not. It's how efficient are you using it.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, you started the show to prove free energy. Well, we've done it.
Yep.
Over 150 times. In fact, we've done it over 500 times. Energy is free. It's not about free energy anymore. It's about how efficient can you use that free energy.
How you use the energy will make the difference of how much energy necessary to run your house.
Right.
You got 10 million things plugged into it and you don't have the pressure potential on the opposite side to push all those 10 million things, then it's obvious you're not going to be able to run it.
Right.
But if you always have a power potential higher than the potential that of the actual load itself, it don't need current watts and amps in order to do it. It's going to rely on the voltage pressure that you're then in turn going to turn into the necessary current watts and amps necessary to run it.
Right.
Man, ain't no wonder why I call it mad science. That's why I get a headache. But either way, you know, it's there. Energy is free. If you can't find it, you're simply not paying attention. You're not looking hard enough. So, how are we going to run our house on all this shazizz? Well, you're going to do a little bit of math, and if you're not able to do a little bit of math, you go get somebody who has a calculator and borrow their calculator or an abacus or any way to cipher up some numbers. And you're going to figure out what your bill says that you need and what you need on the opposite side in order to run what it is that you're running. And if you can't run an abacus or you can't run a calculator or you can't cipher on your fingers,
you're leaving out a slide rule.
You go find somebody, a slide rule. You go find somebody who's good at mathematics and ask them to figure out your system for you, how much of what you're going to have to put where in order to be able to do it, what it is that you're saying. And as far as capacitor technology, it is so ridiculously simple to build a capacitor, so you don't even have an excuse to not go out, I can't afford to buy all these capacitors, you know? Well, think about all the aluminum cans that you throw in the trash. You can make a capacitor out of two aluminum cans, right? Yep. And think about all the plastic that you throw in the trash. There's a dielectric between your two aluminum cans.
There you go.
You can recycle your trash and turn it into a power storing potential that in turn would charge your batteries, which in turn would run your inverters, which in turn would run your house.
Yep.
So there you go, man.
Yep, there you go. I love it.
That's I really don't know where to go from here, man. It's simple. And what I want is somebody out there to prove me wrong. Somebody out there to do the experiments that we've suggested and prove me wrong. It's that simple. If you got 1,000 volts pressure and you want to charge a 10-volt capacitor, how long is it going to take to charge that 10-volt capacitor at 1,000 volts?
Right.
Huh?
Right.
There you go. And then what are you going to do if you charge that and you still got volt 900 left on the other side?
Right.
It's going to charge up. It's going to overcharge. And it's going to discharge itself across terminals because the voltage potential is going to raise so high that it's going to try to find a path to ground. If it can't find a path to ground, it's going to discharge itself.
Right.
Or it's going to break down the dielectric and the capacitor. But if you're using that energy on demand, then you don't have that issue. Hi, Jermaine, are you there?
Yes, I am.
So have you been listening in?
Yeah, a little bit. Halfway.
Well, what do you think?
Last time. Yeah, good.
I think Jermaine would be the perfect one to build this apparatus. But he is good at building stuff like that.
Well, we ought to build some nifty toys that we can put out there in the public that would take like static electricity and you know, like the little kids got the little tennis shoes, and when they walk around, it presses the piezoelectric crystal, which charges a little capacitor that in turn blinks the little LEDs on their shoes.
Right.
Well, what if you did one similar, but it relied on you rubbing your socks on the deal, and then the moment you touch somebody, the light comes on.
There you go.
And it shocks them.
And they talk soprano for a week.
Yeah, we could call it Zapper Lights or something like that. You
right,
know?
Yeah. The voice changer.
Yeah. But anyway, folks, what I showed you was using basic science and explanations coming from the dictionary, frequency, pressure, volume, and resistance. And now you have an understanding of how to get and utilize energy that is surrounding you at any given time. The Earth is, we're floating in a sea of energy. Every one of these frequency ranges out here can be stored if you understand how it travels. If the potential pressure on one side is higher than the container you're trying to pressurize, then you can pressurize that container. If the potential on one side is equal to the one on the opposite side, then they will balance themselves out, and essentially you will meet zero. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, if I take a container that is vacuumed down, and I open that vacuum to the atmosphere, that container will pressurize to the pressure of the atmosphere. So the only pressure that could be measured from that point would be what?
You couldn't.
The atmosphere, which...
Exactly.
It's going to equal itself out. So inside the container, there's only as much pressure as the atmosphere, but you can't really measure it because it's the same as the atmosphere. So if I have a higher atmosphere on the outside, and I allow that to pressurize that container that is a lower... You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
So, it's real simple, man. So, you guys got any thoughts on the matter? Help me out here.
No, we're going to throw you under the bus. You're right, Sue. 100%. You know, the thing is, it's like, again, I want to say it before you took the music break, they built the first solar panel, you know, a little bitty old solar cell, and they put out a little bit of electricity. Well, somebody says, well, what good is that? You can't use it. Well, duh, build more. I mean, this little circuit thing that you put on the chat room, that you drew up or had drawn up or whatever. Anyway, it's super simple. My thought is, what does it cost? I mean, I know the battery you're not even going to use. You're going to use wire. But if you take the same amount of money that you bought the battery, but didn't buy a battery, but just bought enameled wire and stretched it from tree to tree, duh, you'd have more than enough. Okay, so let's just say the cost of the battery is what, 50 cents, 35 cents? And the transistor you got there, well, if you go up and buy one, it's going to cost you 15 or 20 cents. But if you buy 100, it's only going to cost you $2.
Well, here's another key, is that those transistors, they come in all different sizes, some of which run down into, you know, the millivolt range. I mean, they go from all different sizes to how much current and whatever it takes to turn that switch on. Hold on a second.
What size was it that you told me to get to build the flare exciter?
Tip 42C transistor.
Is that what we need for this?
No, these are MOSFETs. These are power. They're essentially the same thing as a transistor. They're just built for more power.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, Stephen Gibbons.
I bought 200 of those. told me to get full of the Slayer exciter.
Cool. Well, we got enough for a lot of circuits then.
Well, 200 of them cost me less than $3. And that included, shipping.
All right. Well, Stephen Gibbons posted a link in there to the equation for... it says on an ordinary day over a flat desert country over the sea, as one goes upward from the surface of the ground, electrical potential increases by 100 volts per meter. Thus is
hey, huh? I've got to get off for a few minutes. I'll be back right back.
All right. So how much is one meter in feet?
About 8 feet. About 3 feet.
Huh?
3 feet, just about.
So, for every 3 feet, you get 100 volts?
Yep.
Cool. Well, there you go. Ah. And if you're way in the heck up in the air, man, you get a lot more. So, there you go, man. Free energy right out of the doggone air. Tesla's radiant energy patent was not wrong. And reason why people ain't figured out how to use Tesla's radiant energy patent to run their house is because they didn't understand how to use this power potential. It's pressure. It's voltage. And once again, the fight that I started back in the day about saying that I didn't care about current watts and amps because it wasn't necessary and the math didn't apply for what it was I was doing, I was right and you were wrong. Period, people. The folks that started a fight with me over that, I was right, you were wrong, you didn't get it. Sorry about your luck. I charge.
It's 3.28 meters, she says. 3.28 meters.
So, how much?
I'm sorry, 3.28 feet is 1 meter.
Well, then that means at 3.28 feet, I can get 100 volts, right?
Yep.
And so using Tesla's radiant energy patent and the information that I just presented right here, you could build yourself a generator system, go out and get you a bunch of PVC poles, and maybe like 8 to 10 feet high, and then every 2 foot that you just said, you put a metal plate like Tesla's patent with a spark gap before the ground, and you circuit in there, and then you do that multiple times for whatever your need is to charge up your power bank, and you use the pressure of each one of these to actually pressurize a capacitor that you in turn run into series and dump down into a battery bank, and bam, there you go. Free electricity right out of the air. Tell me where
pretty
I'm wrong.
39 inches. For every 40 inches, you can call it 100 volts.
Well, there you go. So, it's so incredibly easy to prove. It is just mind-blowing.
Yeah, but it's not just getting the high voltage, you know. It's also designing a mode that runs on high voltage, low amperage.
Yeah, but see, the key about it is, if I got 100 volts, and I'm pressurizing, let's say, a 3-volt capacitor, I got 100 volts power, 100 volts pressure potential to charge that 3-volt Capacitor. If I got a motor that will run on less than 3 volts, I got more than enough power potential to run that motor on demand, because the power pressure on the opposite side will keep that capacitor fully charged and be able to run that smaller motor. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah.
That's the key right there. To ensure that your pressure is high enough on the opposite side that when you're draining that load off of the capacitor, that the energy is coming in so rapidly that the capacitor never gets a chance to go dry. If that capacitor never goes dry, then that you can hook an LED to a capacitor. You can charge a capacitor up, and you can use that capacitor as a battery and like a little flashlight. So if you took and wanted to test this theory, which is no longer theory, it's fact, it's all science, it's all based off of physics and everything else, and you have a power potential of 100 volts that will literally keep that light on continuously, and all you're doing is picking up radiant energy from the air using Tesla's radiant energy patent, if that LED stays on and keeps staying on, kind of like my Free Thinkers video, does that bring a bell to anybody? How many years was that thing? There you go.
Long time ago.
Yeah, and that's because I wasn't using the energy in the conventional sense where you have to have a lot of current to keep something going. What I was doing was taking the high voltage potential and the pressure differences from what was coming from the outside as to the actual storage bank that I needed on the other side, and the pressure that it was able to fill the containers up with was more than enough to continue to run the load.
Right, but it's also, you know, if you apply voltage and lamps like fluorescent lights, they use high voltage, they need high voltage, they don't need a lot of current.
That's a perfect example. And you
we would not need a ballast a transformer or to ramp up the voltage for the fluorescent light bulb. You can just use it straight from the air.
Yeah.
And you don't need to convert it in any way, shape, or form. It's ready to use.
And even that high voltage can be pulsed from the other side. When you have a vacuum spark gap, or you even have an open air spark gap, one of the things about an open air spark gap is that as that discharge is going from one side of the spark to the other, then you get this nifty Venturi effect that actually drags in more energy from the atmosphere, and that's how you feel that ionic wind right before a high voltage discharge across the deal.
Yeah.
So folks, you just heard it right here on the Mad Science Show. 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt, irrefutable proof of free energy. Now the question is, what are you going to do with this knowledge? Are you going to take it and use it? Or are you going to go out and try to get somebody else to use it for you? Or are you going to ask your government to do this? Or what? The knowledge has been there for a long time. You can take high voltage, high frequency, and you can produce visible light and heat from high voltage, high frequency, that you can energize gas into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. You can take that same high frequency and you can run it through nichrome wire or tungsten elements, and you can vibrate those things so rapidly that they will get red hot, producing visible light and heat. And if you understand how the energy travels, if you understand anything about insulation, storage, it's ridiculously simple to build a capacitor. You can take an old dead car battery and turn it into a capacitor. You know, see, a lead acid battery has a positive and a negative plate inside there. And even without the battery acid in it, it still has storage potential, because the air itself in that battery is a dielectric. And the air in itself has to break down in order for those two plates to equal out, in order for one plate to be able to jump across and short to the other. And so, draining all the energy out of a battery, you turn that battery into a capacitor, because it still has the plates, and the actual dielectric is the air. Now, if you want to improve on that, you take that same battery, drain all the battery acid out, flush it out with baking soda, clean it out with distilled water and baking soda, and instead of putting battery acid back in it, you put in like mineral oil, something that is non-conductive, and now you just turn that mineral oil into a dielectric, and you turned a lead acid battery into a capacitor. Does anybody out there disagree with that?
No. You know, it's making capacitor from different materials, but from raw materials, it's very easy. So that would not be the problem.
Well, here you go. Now I just gave you a way that you could recycle all your dead lead acid batteries. All you got to do is drain the battery acid out. That's it. Drain the battery acid out, flush all the impurities, the leftover battery acid and crud out of them, fill them up with mineral oil, and make yourself capacitors out of your batteries. So now you don't even have to throw them in the dump. They have a use again.
Right, it's a dead battery, huh?
Yeah. Tell me that wouldn't work. Explain to me with physics and science why that would not work. Anybody? Nobody?
No.
So now you got to figure out what's the breakdown voltage of a dielectric. All right, what would it take for one plate to get higher charge to actually be able to break over from one plate to the next? How many volts could you cram into one lead acid car battery that no longer had acid in it, and all it had was mineral oil that was now the dielectric for that now capacitor? How much voltage?
Depends what kind of dielectric you're using.
Yeah, we're talking about mineral oil.
Oh, mineral oil. That's probably a schematic or a answer to that question.
Yeah, that's probably an equation, but I'm thinking you're going to get a heck of a lot of power potential before those plates will short themselves out.
Oh, yeah.
And that you could take any lead-acid battery and put thousands of volts in that sucker and have a lot of power potential. That you could take any two objects that you got out there, metal objects, and put them down into any container with mineral oil in there, and whatever the breakdown voltage, that's when it's finally going to short out. But the higher the dielectric, the less likely it's going to arc from one plate to the next, and so you can keep charging that thing and charging that thing until you can't charge it anymore. But I wouldn't touch it afterwards.
Well, charging it, the electrons you can put in the car battery isn't the dielectric. The dielectric is there. It's the breakdown voltage.
Yeah.
Dielectric.
It's so like glass.
But you can only put so much in it.
Yeah.
But if you want more voltage, you could, use a more voltage resistant material or a better dielectric.
Yeah. Like glass. If you had I did a video long ago called wireless capacitor, where I took layers of aluminum foil, layers of glass, layers of aluminum foil, all just stacked them all the way up. And I was picking up the radiant energy off of my Tesla coils that was charging these plates. And because one side was connected to the earth ground, then there was a difference between each of the negative and the positive plates. And all you have to have is a potential difference on either side, and now you have some power.
Right. But so how are you going to get your initial high voltage? Are you going to fly a kite up in the air with a wire?
Well, according to the equation, all you have to go is 1 meter up to get 100 volts.
Yeah, but there is a difference in potential. But when you get 1 meter high up in the air, you are path to ground. So the lines of voltage will deform.
That's right. Well, you take that path. You take and don't put yourself as the path.
So, yeah, that all the layers are very tight together, so you can harness it.
Yeah, well, that's if the insulation in a high voltage wire, if you had some of the wire that they use for the back of flyback transformers in the back of your TV, it's actually designed for high voltage, and you had that wire that was going up, there's no way that that energy can travel outside of that insulation. It has to be guided down that insulation. And until you get it grounded to the earth, you still have that power potential, and then you jump that power potential across the spark gap, or in this case, to run that little circuit, then you have that circuit oscillating, which is fluctuating the magnetic field, and you're producing a higher voltage out the other side. You see what I'm saying? So starting off with 100 volts, when you go down to where and you figure out exactly at what level you can run a transistor at on demand with the power potential you have at the top, you see what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
That'll give you your final output, and from that point you can design your system. What are you doing, buddy?
Oh, not much.
Do you understand anything of what we're talking about?
Oh, yeah, you know I do.
Well,
wow.
So basically, all we're working with is... that's why I kept telling everybody I didn't care about current watts and amps and all that kind of stuff, because what I was trying to show them, it...
You know, running that wire vertical out there however many feet, and you get 100 volts every meter or so.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you got a bunch of amps, but...
you don't need it.
And one guy took his quadcopter up, and he run that thing up a little over 100 foot. He figured he'd put it through his crystal radio and run a few LEDs. He wound up burning himself on the voltage and fried his LEDs. So,
yeah, you don't.
I thought it was hilarious.
You don't need
people
all that
don't
average.
Realize that people don't realize that those facts are actually real. You know?
Sure they are, but you don't need all that doggone average.
You ground one end of it, and you got some decent wire. I mean, you got so much resistance per foot, so you got a lot of feet. So you got resistance, you're not going to get as many amps. But if you can get a fat wire up there, which is heavy, then I tell you what, you can get some amps out of that voltage.
Yeah, but see, what I'm trying to explain to you, Muddy, is you don't need the amperage unless you're trying to run it directly off of that. Just in itself, all you need is that voltage pressure. And all you need is to take that voltage pressure and understand that the container you're trying to charge has to be a lower potential so that it stays charged.
And that if you take it through the higher voltage side of a transformer, and you come down into the lower voltage side, which has a fatter winding, and if you can make that run a constant spark gap,
sure,
then bleeding it off there, you're gonna. It turns your DC into AC, and therefore, yeah, you can get some amperage out of it at your lower voltage.
Well, the whole...
Heck, you can probably blow your cell phone battery.
The whole concept of trying to run it up 300 feet in the air is not plausible for the average Joe, because you can't have things 300 feet in the air over everybody's house. But
right.
All you need, if all you need is 1 meter, or what would you say, 2.9 some, or whatever feet, almost
3.28 feet.
All right, 3.28 feet.
For 39 and a third inches.
All right, 3.28 feet
for,
gives you 100 volts.
100 volts.
And I'm telling you, all you need is the voltage.
Right.
We don't need. We're not worried about the current watts and amps at this point. All we need is the voltage. We need the pressure. That's what voltage equals.
But what I believe on that, you actually have to get above. I think you actually have to get above the trees before that starts doing anything, and get some distance up there and have a plate or something to sit there and absorb it from.
Sure, but there, most trees, at least in my neighborhood, aren't higher than 30 feet. So all you have to have is a, like, 50-foot pole and you got it made.
Oh, yeah. Radio towers, man. If you look down at the bottom of a radio tower,
shoot, you see some, you see plenty of one gauge wire, going to, ground rods down in the bottom. There's probably about 8 or 9 of them on a decent radio tower.
Yep.
Because, and that's fat wire, not skinny wire, fat wire. Because people have been known to get up there to the, you know, they wanna get up there and then they wanna climb the tower for thrills and they wind up getting fried and then the guy that owns the radio tower gets sued.
Yep.
Yep.
So all along they've had high voltage potential, but they deliberately grounded them too, and most folks just think that those tension wires are just to, you know, hold the pole up, which they do help hold the pole up and keep it from swaying too much in the wind. But they're also their second purpose is to ground that doggone thing to the earth so that if anybody comes up there and touches that tower, they don't get the daylight shocked out of them or worse. So there's the energy potential right there. Imagine if you could make a...
We weren't up on a hill.
Imagine if you could make an insulator that... was strong as that cable that would separate the two portions of the cable to literally build a spark gap. If you had that kind of strength in a material, you know, some sort of acrylic or whatever that would hold up like steel wire cable, and you could build a spark gap in between there, you could put terminals on that spark gap, and you could take those terminals and actually send them right directly into a capacitor bank and use that tower as a power potential. Did you miss
anyway, what I was talking about is, you know, if you got something grounded and you stick it up in the air, it's bleeding electrons off from the earth and creating ionization. So here I am, I'm at the radio station and I'm broadcast. All of a sudden, boom, the transmitter goes out. We just got struck by lightning. And you got a good lightning arrestor because it didn't, you know, you got to if you're going to put that much equipment online out there and start putting waves out 250 to 1,000 watts out there in AM and the FM deal. And these had two radio tubes, vinyl tubes. They were called 3500Zs. There were two of them, and in order to fire them things back up, you had to turn off the plate voltage and heat up the filament. And when the filament got warm enough, you turn it back on. Then you'd have to trim the plate voltage and dip the current, and that took about 5 minutes. And I think I got a half a song out, and I got hit again. That happened like 5 times in a row. Every time I started transmitting and ionizing the air, the lightning would hit again. So, spent little more than 45 minutes trying to stay on the air. And then, after the beginning of the storm went through and all the turbulence and everything disappeared, we stayed on the air and stuff. But I remember that several times. But that was, like the third time I was out broadcasting on KXOX radio. And, I was on the phone with Benton Ray, an old man who was a technician and stuff. He said, yep, walked me through it the first 2 times. He said, all right, I'm off the phone. You know what to do. You're going to get hit several more times. And he already knew we were. So, yeah, there's quite a bit of a charge, and it's going to attract the lightning. So,
that's right.
You got to be real careful about your lightning arresters when the storms come.
Well, either way, if you wanted to, there's probably all kinds of different safety devices you could put in play to where if a lightning bolt did hit that thing, it would leap across the opposite side and go straight to the ground or whatever. Nonetheless, it's out
there. I thought they had a real expensive, sophisticated system out there. But no, the coax came in down at the bottom of the antenna, and there was a box. And Benton Ray showed me this box. The center wire of the coax, you know, it's dead center, and then it's got a shield around it. The center wire was came over to a plate, and the whole box was shielded. And this plate had a sharp screw that came over, and basically you touch the plate, and then you back it off about an eighth of an inch or less. and that screw was to another plate that went straight to ground, and that was it. Whatever voltage it takes to jump that spark gap is how much it would basically bleed off to ground.
Yeah.
And heck, I thought it was some sophisticated deal. It's dope, just something to for it to arc across from the center wire down, and of course the shield was grounded. And there was one more up at the station.
Which is brilliant, enough what you just said.
Enough of that came through to turn off the transmitter as well. So I thought it was pretty neat that it was so simple.
Which is brilliant what you just said, because you just explained that if it only takes a certain amount of voltage to leap across that gap, then that's where the energy is going to go.
That's right, and that saved the rest of your equipment.
Yep. So there you go, man.
That's pretty amazing.
Well, folks, the answer is right there on the table for you. If you're ready to use it, and it's time for smart people to get to work and actually make it happen. I ordered about 10 of these MOSFETs from China, so whenever I get them, I get them, and I'm going to build some circuits and run some tests, and I'll do some videos on those tests to show you the what potentials you could use them for and how you can store that power. And like I said, I've said it before, I've said it again, energy's free, and if you can't find it, you simply ain't looking hard enough for it. You ain't paid attention in basic science and physics and all that kind of stuff, so I don't know what to say anymore. But I think I proved my case. Raymond, are you there? Yep, looks like we lost Raymond. We lost Muddy. Anyway, folks, we're down to it.
Not.
We're down to it. That's the Mad Science Show for today. So if you like what you heard here, if you're interested in free energy and high voltage, you came to the right place. If you like what you heard here, share this with all your social media networks out there, and we'll keep on putting more information on the table for you. So thanks for everybody listening in and contributing to links and information out there. And basically, as far as I'm concerned, there ain't no more proof necessary for free energy. It's just a matter of who wants to use the information or not. That's it. It's as simple as that. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch